Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. First, before we introduce today's guest, I just want to touch on a mini milestone that the podcast is reaching. Jack, this is our 50th episode. So just 50 more until we hit 100, which is a nice little thing to just stop and reminisce on for a second. And then guys, we announced the Estelle's gift card giveaway. You'll have until April 23rd. So stay in touch on our socials, interact, and hopefully one of you guys will be picked to get the gift cards. So now to introduce our guest, we have former Notre Dame and UCF quarterback and co-founder of Mogul, which is actually the company I'm currently interning for. We have Brandon Wimbush. How's everything going with you?
Awesome, Sammy. Thank you so much for having me, you and Jack. I'm really an advocate and fond of what you guys have established here with your guys' podcast. It seems like you guys have some really cool guests on and talk about some really intriguing topics. So excited to be here. And you know, congratulations to you guys on your 50th, right? Like that's the thing I try to preach, Sammy, at Mogul, is just taking a step back and reflecting on your journey to where you guys are today, right? So it's a phenomenal thing and it's definitely not easy. So here's to 50, and then next is like the 100 mark, like you said. So
for sure. Thanks. So before we dive into Mogul and stuff, we kind of want to talk about your story and how you kind of ended up to the point of creating Mogul. So my first question for you is, how did you get into football and what was your recruitment journey like? Because, you know, when we were doing our research, we saw guys like Matt LaFleur recruited you, Lane Kiffin, Ryan Day. So what was it like having guys like that wanting you to play for them?
That was awesome, right? Like you mentioned Matt LaFleur, and just talk about his rise, Danny, from when he recruited me. We played Brayton Catholic on 9/11 rivalry game on ESPN. And, you know, St. Peter's Prep and myself, we had a really good game, and Matt LaFleur reached out after that game. And then fast forward to signing day, Sammy, he had left on signing day. So I signed at probably 10 a.m., gave him a call and told him I was coming and was committed to Notre Dame. And he called me later that night, probably around 4 or 5 that evening, and he tells me that he's taking a job with the Atlanta Falcons with his brother, who I think was the offensive coordinator at the time. So it's crazy, right? And one piece of advice that I would give to current high schoolers that are going through that process is just really make the decision for yourself, right? Make the decision that's going to put you in the best position no matter what, right? So not relying on the coaches, not going to play for a certain coach, right? Because those guys and girls tend to do what's right and what's best for them and their family, which is, you know, you can't be mad at. But as a player, you have to understand that. And you have to understand that this is your journey, right? And your family's journey. So whatever's going to set you up the best. But getting back to my story a little bit, right? It was a roller coaster, man, but a pretty rewarding opportunity, right? Like not everybody gets the opportunity to go play out of Notre Dame. So for me to be able to choose between some of the top programs in the country was humbling.
So what was it about Notre Dame? And you talk about Matt LaFleur leaving literally the day you signed. So was that kind of a moment where you wished you picked a different school, or did you go to Notre Dame for Notre Dame and it was kind of whoever's coaching, I'll deal with it?
Yeah, I think it was more so of the latter, right? It was me deciding what was going to be best for me academically, spiritually, and athletically. And I thought Notre Dame had kind of those three things locked down as far as the schools that I evaluated, right? So I was happy with my decision regardless, but that definitely taught me a lot in that moment.
Was there ever a feeling while you were at Notre Dame, maybe within your first month, that you were just like, you'd seen the movie Rudy growing up and you said, holy shit, like this is just like, I need to take that moment for a half second, or was it just business from the get-go?
You know what, Jack, I'll be honest with you, man. I wasn't like a huge Notre Dame guru fan growing up, like a lot of the people are. It's either you're a fan or you're not. There's nobody really that's on the fence there. So I actually saw Rudy in one of my religion classes, I think my senior year. And that was the first time I had seen the film. But sorry about that. But very inspiring film nonetheless. And
he's just excited about Notre Dame. Real big Notre Dame fan.
But yeah, so and then yeah, I got to campus, man, and the first month, there wasn't any part of me that was like, I was there and I got ingrained into the Notre Dame like tradition once I was there, right? It wasn't anything, and it was business from the start, but gradually it kind of, you kind of realize and you kind of start to appreciate what you were part of.
What was one of those first big shifts that you had to make coming from high school, going to Notre Dame, that you just never really anticipated, but it came with being a quarterback in a school as rich of a program as Notre Dame's?
You know, I was fortunate enough to go, I went to a Jesuit school, Jesuit high school, right? So as you can imagine, kind of the transition was a little bit easier for me coming from that atmosphere than, you know, a kid that maybe coming from a public school. But I think that really is what made the transition, you know, as seamless and as easy as it was for me. But I think just going from high school to the collegiate level, it's an entirely different ball game, and you kind of have to understand that, and that's where your preparation comes in. So,
do you have any? What was Brian Kelly like as a coach? Because I feel like a lot of people have, and for me being a casual Notre Dame fan, I feel like he, in my opinion, catches a lot of criticism for being a very good coach as he is. What is he like behind the scenes as someone who's trying to rally the team and get them ready for a season or after a loss? Like, what is Brian Kelly like?
That's a great question. And during my time, Jack, we went 4-8, and I don't think there was another time during Brian Kelly's tenure that we only won 4 games and lost 8 games or whatever it was. So that was a huge learning experience for me. I think that was my sophomore year, and then I started the year after that. So I think it was 2016, 2017. That's the biggest change in Coach Kelly's approach to coaching, right? And I think it has shown that he has the ability to evolve even in his 25th to 30th year of coaching. He has the ability to evolve to what works right now. And I think that speaks to his overall ability to just coach, like be a great coach, right? Over so many different years and so many different programs, it comes to fruition through the way that he approaches his profession.
Can you kind of take us through what it was like your first home game at Notre Dame starting under center? Like, what was that like for you? And like, what was that experience?
Temple, 2017. I mean, it was a day game. I remember it like it was yesterday, but I kind of remember, Sammy, the game against Texas, which was my first game being a part of the program, 2015, running out on a Saturday night under the lights through that tunnel. And we beat Texas 38-3. Malik Zaire was the quarterback at that moment. He was 21 of 24 for 280 yards. I couldn't tell you my stats the first game I started, but I can tell you the stats of another guy, right, who I was competing against the first time I ran out the tunnel. I just think that speaks to how special that university and that program is, because there was nothing like that. But for me, that first game, we won big, and it just kind of helped me get on a roll and a path. And, you know, at one moment in that year, 2017, we were ranked 3rd in the country, and we had everything, you know, in our hands, in the palm of our hands, but we kind of let it slip later on that year. But we definitely got off to a good start, and we were excited about it.
What were some of the best moments for you playing at Notre Dame as a starter, and what were some of the most challenging moments for you?
I think some of the best moments, right, and it's kind of cliche, but just being around the guys, right, just being in the locker room, being able to go to the dining table and traveling with the guys, being in the hotels with the guys, like, those are bonds. And again, it's cliche, but it's the real deal. Those are the bonds that you build and that last forever, for a lifetime. So I think that easily is the best part of it. And really the relationships that I built, I was fortunate enough to build being the quarterback at the University of Notre Dame, right? That come along with it. And that can kind of answer and flow into the second part, is that just the pressure, the second part of your question, the pressure that comes with that position is also a privilege, and it's a blessing, but it's a challenge. So at times it was the most challenging part, but then you sit back and you reflect, like I was saying at the beginning of the call, and you appreciate the position that you're in, right? And the value you can add to so many people's lives. But yeah, it was challenging in that you had so much on you as an 18, 19, 20 year old, and you had to figure out how to deal with it really on your own, unless you really tapped into some of the resources that were available to you. But yeah.
How did you cope with the pressure and the challenges and the anxieties that come with being the face of a program? And, you know, if you win or lose, you're going to be one of the few players called out every game on your performance, and it's going to be noticed.
Yeah, that's just something you got to deal with when you play quarterback, no matter where you play. Right? You got to be willing to dish out the gratitude and the, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You got to be willing to dish it out when you guys win, and you got to be willing to take all the blame when you guys lose. That just comes with playing the position, right? Again, wherever you're playing. But, you know, the way I dealt with it is just being around the guys again, right? Like, that support system as well as my family, there was nothing better than to know that I'm going back into a locker room full of guys that loved me for who I was as an individual, and not for, you know, what I was doing on the field. Obviously, there was that relationship too. They wanted me to perform, but you know, give it 30 minutes after the game and we're having a you know, we're hanging out together, right? So we're hanging. So that was always great to have in my corner.
Did you ever have to step away from social media at all during your time as quarterback, or was it just you let the critics say what they wanted on there and you didn't mind it?
I did, man. That was my time at UCF. I stepped away. I got off Twitter, got off Instagram. I definitely did. That's interesting that you bring that up. I think it was like a 2-month period. And funny story, like I had like 15K on Twitter before I did that. And then I got locked out after I tried to come back on. Once I started running Mogul, and it's a huge platform to have, right? 15,000 people following you. And once you want to build up a company, if you guys wanted to start launching your podcast, imagine having 15K of, you know, access, and then you had to start over. So, you know, at least on the Twitter platform. So now I have like 500 followers. I'm struggling, but it would have been nice. But yeah, I definitely, you know, it's a mental thing, right? And you see it with Kevin Durant, right? Like, some guys can't take it, that social media antagonizing. Like, it definitely gets to some of these athletes' mental and deteriorates their game.
For sure. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is you touched on going to UCF. So when you transferred there, what led you to picking UCF, like, over other schools as a transfer? And what did you learn about yourself throughout, you know, your football career, like through that time period, like, you know, about you and just about what you wanted to do moving forward?
Yeah, UCF gave me a really good opportunity to play and play early on the field, right? Mackenzie Milton got hurt. It's no secret. Mackenzie Milton got hurt. DJ Mack was there. And the staff at that time felt that they might could, you know, improve at the position, right? So they were like, let's bring a kid in, or not improve at the position, but, you know, call for some battle, right? Some QB battle, right? That's always healthy for the QB room. So they did that, and they gave me a call, they gave me a shot. They had a freshman coming in from Hawaii who's a damn good player right now, and he kind of led the way after I just kind of took a back seat after game one. But really, really awesome program. And they're obviously building with Gus Malzahn being down there now. And I think the sky's the limit for those guys down there.
Oh, yeah. The second part was just like, what have you learned about yourself from your college football experience? And what have you taken away from that?
Just a quick answer, right? Like, I think adversity, I've been through so much adversity playing college ball. Like, I learned a lot about myself. And I think the biggest thing is that, I'm trying to think of what I wanted to say. I don't know, I just went blank. That I'm able to deal with it, right? Like, I found ways to not cope, but to thrive. Like, there's a difference between surviving in adversity and thriving in adversity, right? So the way I did it was picking every situation and figuring out how I can learn from that situation, not just sitting in it and living through it, right? Like, there was ways that I could learn and grow from my adverse situations, and I think I did that.
What kind of similarities did you see in Notre Dame being such an established program, and then you go to UCF, which is on the rise nationally? What kind of similarities did you see in that established nature that Notre Dame had, and then UCF, where they hadn't quite been there yet? They had kind of messed around with it, but they hadn't been a solidified national presence. But that program, like you just said, has been growing and growing and is still growing. What, like, where have you seen some of those crossovers, if any, from the two programs?
Yeah. I think just intensity, like the grit and the eagerness to win at a high level, right? Obviously, Notre Dame, we're playing for a national championship every year. UCF, we had the conference championship, but they want to be at that national championship level, right? If they fall short of that, they fall short of their goals for the year. So I think just that overall goal and mindset of being the best in the country is really where I saw overlap. And again, UCF's only a 50-year program, and they're in the development stage, but I think they're at a really good position to take the country and college football by storm over the next 5 to 10 years.
And then one more follow-up on that. Just because I have followed Notre Dame since I was I probably since like Manti Te'o and them faced Alabama in the national championship. And it's felt like, for me at least, with Notre Dame, that they'll get to that national stage and they can't quite get over that hump to winning the game rather than just playing in the game. Where do you see, in your own objective opinion, Notre Dame maybe falling short to some of these programs that have found a national success? Is there a gap within the coaching, the recruiting, or just maybe they haven't had the ball bounce their way? Because for me, it just feels like they've been there so many times and they haven't had any hardware or any success to really show for it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. I think it's we're missing a Jack McFarland on the team.
Yeah, for real. You're like, I'm going to make that difference.
But I think what it is, Jack, is that you can't recruit the player that goes to Alabama. You can't recruit typically the player that goes to Alabama, right? Just from an academic rigor and an academic standard requirement, right? I think we're the closest one, right, with those requirements, right? You think about the Northwesterns, you think about the Stanfords, right? Like, we're the ones that are kind of in between on that verge of, like you said, we're always right there. And, you know, we beat the Clemson last year, and maybe they weren't the best team in college football, but they were ranked number one at that time. And I don't know what it's going to take, right? I think it's both, right? It's the recruiting, and then it's the ball sometimes doesn't bounce our way. Like, we're always in the games. It's one or two plays, I'm telling you, over the past couple of years, it's one or two plays that really shifts the momentum, and we're right there, but it just hasn't gone our way.
So I want to jump into where you are today now, and I want to, talk to you about Mogul. So you're the co-founder of Mogul. How did you come up with the concept and the idea of the Mogul platform, and how did it kind of come about, and you partnering with Aiden? And
So Mogul, the marketplace, is Aiden's original idea, but Notre Dame's venture capital network is extensive, and it continues to grow. And if you're a VC, you have a futuristic mindset, and you think about opportunities that are going to come and be beneficial monetarily in 5 to 10 years. So I built a really good relationship with a guy named Tim Connors, who's a VC, a Notre Dame grad. And in 2019, he had a little bit of understanding around the name, image, and likeness rule when the NCAA first voiced support for the change. He mentioned to me that I had a good connection with Roc Nation at the time, which is the big, all service sports agency. So he said, why don't you figure out a way to do something with the athletes within Roc Nation and the college athletes, right? Or the agents within Roc Nation and the college athletes that are going to be able to be represented by athletes now. And so my mind started spinning around ways we can do something. I had no idea. I was still playing ball. I was still training for the NFL. Aiden, my partner, my co-founder, comes along in January of last year and proposes this idea, which he had for about a couple months now, and said, let's make a two-sided marketplace. Let's create a two-sided marketplace, right? And really a holistic process to help the athletes monetize their name, image, and likeness, allowing them to connect with these businesses and brands that, that see so much value in these athletes but never had access to them, right? And, Aiden and I have been friends since high school, Sammy, and we went to rival high schools and then obviously attended the same college and always had mutual friends and whatnot. And he knew he could, you know, he had me as a sounding board as the athlete, right? Because the athlete here is really the key stakeholder in this entire process. And without their view and without their perspective, anybody who tries to operate in this space is going to fail.
Yeah, so that kind of leads into my next question, which is, in your vision of Mogul, what is the mission of Mogul? What are you currently trying to achieve with the company? And what are you trying to achieve, you know, 6 months, 8 months, a year, 2 years from now?
Yeah, I think right now what we're trying to do, right, and why we have an entire team that's done a really good job, including yourself, is to build brand awareness, right? And this is where you come in because you're on the brand building side of our company right now. And that's what I think we're trying to do, especially amongst the college athletes and hopefully in some of these college towns, you know, marketing towards some of the local businesses that are going to be able to work with our platform and with their athletes. And then obviously for the July 1 date, right, being able to operate down here in Florida, establish a model, establish our business model here in Florida first, right, succeed and fail. This is what I've been saying is that we have the opportunity to succeed and fail in one state as long as it stays, you know, the legislation stays state by state. We have the opportunity to succeed and fail here and take our model as we succeed and grow to other cities and other states, right? So as states starts to legalize the rule, then we can, you know, grow into those states. But I think down the road, right, I'll just jump into our five-year deal. I really want to be synonymous with all college sports and all college athletes, right? Synonymous with NCAA. Having Mogul as a platform that serves all of our college athletes that allows them to, you know, make money on the side, right? As little extra income as they can and benefit the families of the college athletes.
So for the athletes that are wondering, you know, there are other platforms that have kind of popped up here and there where they're trying to market on NIL and things like that. What makes Mogul different than other companies that are out there trying to get out there in the NIL space?
What makes us different, man, is founded for athletes by athletes. So our mission here is to empower the college athlete throughout this entire process. So really putting this entire process in the palm of their hands, allowing them to serve as their own agent, essentially going out, sourcing these deals, making sure that their eligibility is never jeopardized, right? Helping them with finances, right, helping them with brand building awareness, making sure that we're doing this process right and the due diligence is done for them, right? And making it easy and seamless, right? Because as a college athlete, that's one thing that, that's what I would want out of this process is just get on an app, to, you know, go from point A to point Z in this process and not have to worry about anything else. So that's what we're being able to provide here. And that's what I'm excited for.
I was just going to ask if there was ever a moment during your collegiate career where you felt like a platform like Mogul would have really helped you, or if it was just in the back of every athlete's mind during that time where they knew that there was kind of a gray area where the NIL fills that now, but they didn't really know how to put it into words.
Ask that one more time, Jack. Sorry.
What I'm trying to ask is, like, did you ever during your time say there is like a serious place for us to capitalize on our name, image, and likeness, and there really wasn't any way for college athletes at the time too? Were college athletes able to kind of put it into words and talk to each other about it, or was it just something that was unsaid and there really at the time, like unlike there is now, there really wasn't any thought process or anything being done to allow athletes to try to capitalize on this?
Yeah, I think you said it was a conversation of whether or not we should be paid. It wasn't a conversation of how we should be paid or what platform or what resources are out there. That's where the business opportunity comes in, right? Is after you get past the first part, after you get past the first question of whether or not we should be paid, which is yes, how, right? And I agree with the model now, it's just that it's not a salary based, right? It's a free market, go make your own money through endorsement deals. And then where we come in is being is a resource. So we serve as a resource to these athletes to help them do it properly and efficiently and effectively. So yes, it was always a conversation in locker rooms, and I was always a part of those conversations, but never really thought about the business opportunity until obviously I'm out of school now.
On the Mogul platform, on the Instagram platform, I should say, just on your Instagram account, you do quite a few Instagram lives with different college athletes, former college athletes who are now professional athletes, such as Minka Fitzpatrick, Blake Barnett, you know, athletes all over the country. We have a lot of college athletes that listen and who come on our podcast. So if you were having a conversation with them, what is your pitch to them to come and join Mogul?
Unless we're talking to I'm assuming we wouldn't be talking to a caliber of athlete that's on the same level as Trevor Lawrence or Zion Williamson. Right? So therefore our pitch is that we have opportunities on our platform where you as a person who's not going to be represented by an agent has the opportunity to engage in your local markets or even national level deals to make money and to monetize off of your brand and your name, image, and likeness, right? So we can speak to a softball player, a woman softball player, and we can speak to a Zion Williamson, and we can have the opportunity and really pitch them the same idea, right? Our pitch doesn't change here because we have such a wide breadth of opportunities that lie on our platform. And then again, it's a holistic process. We're taking care of everything that you're gonna have to worry about, right? From taxes to NIL disclosures, how much you're getting paid. You know, we have a back-end compliance monitoring system for the compliance officer at each of these schools that's gonna be needed. And we're paying you on our app. I mean, where else are you to go for all this in one-stop shop? So, you know, I think the pitch is that we take care of the process for you, point A to point Z.
So one thing I'm sure people would, you know, are asking themselves as they're hearing this are, what has the athlete's response been? What have businesses' responses been? Like, what intrigues athletes to Mogul? What has gotten them engaged? Like, have they given you feedback of things they want to see on the platform that you're currently working on adding, or you're designing it with that in mind? Can you kind of take us through some of that?
Yeah, for me, right, I've had multiple conversations. I mean, maybe over 1,000 conversations with athletes thus far. And I mean, I understand what my experience was as an athlete. And I keep telling, you know, the team who's putting together our app and Aiden, my partner and co-founder again, that on day one, when an athlete wakes up and they can go make money, the easiest thing for them to do, and what I would have done, is create my own logo, my BMW, my initials are BMW, create your own logo, you create your own LLC, and you go out and you make merch, you go out and you make apparel, right, with that, whatever it is, it's a shirt, it's a sweater, it's sleeves, it's a headband, it's gloves, right? So that's what we want to be able to do on our platform on day one, just to draw talent to our platform. But I think as we grow, you know, every athlete wants the opportunity to make money and to be endorsed and to have sponsorship deals. So that's our growth. You know, that's our growth strategy, is to just get into every local community that has a, you know, that's focused on that college athletics, and really dominate.
There was a moment, it's funny you bring up the making your own merch. There was a moment about a week or two ago here at Iowa where Spencer Lee, who had just won the national championship without either of his ACLs, said in his post-match interview, he said he didn't tell anybody about the ACLs because excuses are for wusses, or F excuses. And a local, I don't know where, it might have been just at a mall here, they took that, and Spencer Lee's kind of been thought of as like the Yoda of the group. I don't know why, it's just kind of this thought. And they put a Yoda on a shirt, and they had the quote there. And an athlete went to the mall, and they saw that, and they're like, well, everybody knows Spencer Lee's not making a penny on this, but whoever came up with this is obviously going to. And it was just like, it was such a backwards way of someone making money off of what Spencer Lee had said and what he has done. But perfect example of right then, one of an athlete could have used Mogul and really capitalized once Spencer Lee had known he was at this point in his career to start really like capitalizing on it. And I think, like you see in the next 5-10 years, I really think athletes coming into college are going to take advantage of that because of just how media has evolved. There are so many eyes for people to see whatever they want to see. And it, you just follow someone and you see everything, and you can show, like you said, you had a platform of 15,000, you had to restart it, but that is 15,000 people. You can show whatever you want to, and that's, you can create a business with that right away. Like you said.
Yep. You hit it on the head, Jack. I mean, that it's so unfortunate that, that Spencer had to go through that, right? But that's the prime, that's like the prime situation and scenario where, like that, he's at the peak of his career, right? So that's another thing that we just want to be able to help these athletes while they're at the peak of their career. That's why we're catering to the other 98% of athletes that's not going to play on professionally.
When you saw the not NCAA property hashtag kind of go around Twitter and really start to make the news all over the country with guys like from Iowa, Jordan Bohannon, Isaiah Livers at Michigan, and Geo Baker at Rutgers, what was your first reaction to it? And as a business owner or somebody who's, you know, running a startup, what did you think that, how do you think this is going to help Mogul out in the next couple months, but down the road?
I think it just pushes forward the conversation. I think that's all we need, right? I think that's all we need. And like I stated earlier in the conversation here is that the athlete is the key stakeholder. They're the ones that are being affected and impacted the most throughout this process. So the more that they speak up, the more that the athlete voices their opinions on this matter, the better we are off as the mobile, you know, the better the Mogul team is, right? And the more we have the opportunity to engage the athlete, right? The more this is a conversation, the more they care about it. So that's, it's always a plus when the conversation is brought to the table and when athletes are dedicating a lot of their time to voicing their opinion.
One project you're also working on outside of Mogul is you work with House of Athlete, which is Brand Marshall's company. How did that opportunity come about for you? And what have you been learning from working there and being a part of his team? And how have you been able to apply that to Mogul?
I steal all his athletes. No, I'm kidding. Brand has been a phenomenal resource for me. I hope I've been a phenomenal resource for him as well. It's been a very mutually beneficial, you know, opportunity for us from both Mogul and House of Athlete. I obviously have a background in playing sports. He does too. So he has access that I have, like he has way more access than I have. So it's not needed, you know, from that point of view, but just me being on the ground, being, you know, very recently removed from the college landscape is a good resource for somebody who's building up what he's building. And then just learning how to run a company, right? He's a CEO. He's a, I mean, he's not a first time CEO, but he's still learning, right? Like HOA is in a startup. They're in the startup phase as well. And, you know, they're obviously ahead of us given his resources, but it's very similar in the stages that we're in. And it's like, you learn something new every day, and the personality, right? Like whether or not he has a good CEO personality and whether or not his employees like him, I'm definitely taking some of that and hopefully applying it to what I'm doing at Mogul. And hopefully it's valuable, you know?
Have you said anything, or has Brandon said anything about the meme going around of him yelling on Twitter?
Yeah, that's funny, man. I was actually supposed to go to the show tonight. I won't reveal who the guests are until it comes out, but like that's a platform that we're going to be able to utilize, you know, at Mogul, right? Is the I Am Athlete, one of the fastest growing shows in the world right now. But viral is better for him. Anything that goes viral is more media attention, and that's what he likes.
What have you learned from, you know, being around that show? Like, you know, like what has entertained you from just being around it? And like, have you learned anything from the discussions that have happened so far?
Yeah, I think if you take away, you know, if you listen in, right, there's so much to learn. I mean, they have conversations really on everything from finance to relationships to sports to, you know, the street. Like, it's everything, right? So it's very valuable conversation that's going on at that table, and all the perspectives that they bring in goes such a long way, and that's why they have such a vast audience.
So my final question for you, and then Jack can close it out if he has a final one too, we can kind of end it there. But first, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast, the platform, having this conversation with us. But after kind of, you know, going down memory lane a little bit with you from high school to college to where you're at now, looking back, like, what would be a piece of advice you'd give your 18-year-old self for going into college after all the experiences you've had?
I think I mentioned it already in this conversation, is that just not get, you know, not caring about what others think of me, right? That would have allowed me to, like, my brand would have been off the charts if I had not cared. Like, I would have been on Instagram, I would have been on Twitter, I would have been on, at the time, Facebook. Like Gary Vee, I should have watched Gary Vee like when I was in like sophomore year. I mean, but again, like, and then playing at Notre Dame, there's this persona sometimes that you have to put on that doesn't allow you to really be yourself, right? I think that's what I'm trying to say. But the 18-year-old self and you know, for future college athletes or for any high school athlete right now that's looking to play in college, that just really continue to be yourself and find ways to grow your brand and be authentic across all platforms. And I think that's where you, again, you achieve true peace and true happiness. And eventually it becomes, you know, monetary, right? You can start making money off of that.
My final question has to do with the upcoming NFL draft, and I've been asking a lot of our guests the same question. Out of the 5 quarterbacks that you could pick in the first round, which one would you pick, and do you think would be a franchise quarterback? Not name Trevor Lawrence, because that's chalk. I feel like everyone knows that answer. But which one would you choose and why?
I'm choosing Zach Wilson. I just see too much of a Mahomes in him. So I see too much of an athletic ability to throw on the run, throw off platform, you know, be dynamic in the pocket, outside the pocket, and do things that really other quarterbacks can't do from an arm angle standpoint and just from a playmaking standpoint. What about you guys? Who you got, Jack?
I mean, the days leading up to this draft have become more and more stressful as a Bears fan, just because there's been news of possibly the Bears trading up to number 4. And as a fan, that just makes me a little scared, because we've been through that before and we've sacrificed a lot of future for a quarterback that hasn't worked. And we have the same management making that decision again. So yeah. I personally don't want a quarterback right now, because I don't think the Bears should give up a lot of draft capital. But if I had to pick one of the 5, I think Justin Fields would.
Of course, you take mine.
I think Justin Fields would be so good. I think he's right now going to be so good. I think he's got a lot of recency bias not favoring him with Zach Wilson. And a lot of people have been saying that Justin Fields is the number 2 pick for how long? And now Zach Wilson is all of a sudden. So I don't think it's by, you know, chance that Justin Fields was good and then bad. I think he's really good, and I think he will be really good. So that's my pick.
Yeah, no, that was the one time we agree on something, Jack. that for me too, like with Justin Fields, the big thing I just think is, I think there's a lot of Fields fatigue, where he's been talked about since high school as him and Lawrence as the 1 and 2, and they've performed up to par. And so I think the big thing now is he's just, you know, Zach Wilson's kind of like, I guess, like a Carson Wentz type of shiny new quarterback we haven't seen a lot of, where a lot of people want to, you know, talk about him and stuff, and a few of the other guys, Trey Lance and stuff. But I think Fields is a guy who's going to come in and be ready to play.
Well, we just want to thank you again, Brandon, for coming on. And to all of our listeners, just to reiterate what Sam said, keep your eyes peeled on our social social channels for that gift card giveaway from Estella's. As always, not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.